Welcome to Took Talk, a video podcast by the band Took, and brought to you by Black Frog Media. We chat with the best in the music industry from yesterday and today, with a focus on the good old days of Canadian rock. This episode originally streamed live on Tuesday, January 5th, 2021 on Facebook Live. Now, here are your hosts, Todd, Brent, Shane, Corey, and Darren.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year indeed. My goodness.
Indeed.
Dudes of leisure.
I know, right?
A coffee to start the new year. What's up, dudes?
So what did you guys do?
Yeah, there's a question.
Like Dick Clark or Vince Lombardo or perhaps, what was it, Lawrence Welk? Any of those shows still on?
Lawrence Welk? No.
Tommy Hunter show.
Tommy Hunter. Mm.
Do you guys remember the intro, the song, the Lawrence Welk song?
Yeah.
No.
Sure. What's it again?
How'd it go?
No, I can't remember. That's what I'm asking.
Ah. Oh, wow.
I just have to hear two notes.
That was a big psych. I was kind of like,
yeah.
I know. Apparently, I'll know it as soon as I hear it.
You know, Todd, you and I have played that, the Palladium in LA.
Yeah.
I think that's where they filmed it.
Really? Wow.
Could be worth Googling in the next.
I got to say, whenever the Lawrence Welk show came on, I was always sad because, you know, you had two channels. And I think it came on right after Walt Disney or Star Trek. I can't remember. It was always on Sunday.
Right.
Yeah. And it was always such a down. Oh, now we got to watch the Lawrence Welk show.
I think it was after the Wonderful World of Disney, which was
a Wonderful World. Yeah.
Yes. I don't know if that was. I think I had the CBS. It must have been everything. Yeah.
I did have appreciation for clarinet, though. Once you know, because there was all those other instruments in those shows, but I always thought the drums were cool. I don't know where'd Shane go.
He's adjusting his camera.
We're getting his stats. Hang on. Life support Hang system.
On. What's that?
He's shooting.
Oh, my gosh.
I love it.
That's perfect.
We have to have somebody do this.
Looks just like him.
You couldn't leave well enough alone.
I had it looking so good.
He hasn't sleep last night. He's been setting up cameras and lighting and like
when I hooked up with you guys, it was looking great. And then when I connected with you guys, it defaulted to my camera.
At least the circle pulses when he talks.
Yeah.
You look like HAL 3000 from 2001 of Space Odyssey.
Okay, I'm gonna rejoin you guys. Sorry.
Cool. Okay, bye.
Sorry.
See you in a minute.
There we go. New Year's here was pretty quiet. I mean, nothing to do, nowhere to go. And so we just did dinner at home, and that's pretty much it, you know.
You didn't watch Kiss?
We had this talk. I watched it the next day on YouTube. Oh.
Yeah, I know. I was talking about that. I'm like, everybody kind of, you know, jumps in and goes, yeah, well, sure, we'll watch it. That sounds like fun. And then the next day you're like, wait, it's for free now? Okay.
Well, are you serious?
Well, I mean, $40. I think it's a rip. Like, I think it's somebody.
I don't think Gene approved, you know, but yeah, it was, but honestly, I think it really affected me was the time, because I mean, when did it go live? It would have been 1 o'clock in the afternoon or something here. Like
9 a.m. here, I think.
Yeah. So yeah.
12 hours ahead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was a little bit of it just didn't feel right if you weren't watching it live. So
that's what we kind of waited. We watched it later in the evening, but even then it was still kind of like, you know, there wasn't really a countdown or anything, so it was kind of whatever.
I got a good kick out of Paul Stanley's between song banter.
Yeah.
Always.
He'd just talk like this, and then all of a sudden he would go up high, and then he'd jump.
Well, that's been his thing, yeah. What did you think about the censorship and the, you know?
Yeah, right.
I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter.
I couldn't say virgin. That's a swear word.
Brent and I have been through this a few times. In Asia, it can be very complicated, and I would assume Dubai. Tell me this, Brent. We've been to Dubai a couple of times, and I had to say to my wife, all I remember is being in complete jet lag. I don't really remember a lot about it. I remember driving around. I remember seeing a Tim Hortons ad the size of like the Chrysler building. It was just like the whole side of this building was a Tim Hortons ad, and we were like, wow, what the hell?
In Arabic, it says Tim Hortons, but then when you go to the in front of the store, everything's in Arabic. But
yeah,
Starbucks and Tim Hortons were very, very prevalent everywhere we went.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've been there twice, and I know that you can't say, we could say fuck on Took Talk, but you can't say that word in
We just got canceled.
Yeah, no, in the Emirates. Yeah,
we just lost our Emirates sponsorship. Great.
Sorry. Thanks.
It wasn't so much even the censorship. It was the fact that it was a Kiss show without the blood, the spitting blood. I mean, that's like, you know.
Yeah. Is that something that they weren't allowed to do, or they just?
I think so. I think out of respect.
I think what it is they're sort of like out of respect for the, you know, for their thing. But, they just didn't do that.
But the screens in behind had an animated gene with blood.
Yeah.
Which was probably even worse because, like, old school, we had it all over his face. And
yeah.
He's a disaster by the end of the show. If you ever, like, pay attention, he's a mess.
Did you watch it, Shane?
No, I didn't see it.
Yeah. Jody said, wow, his makeup is bad. Somebody should be touching that up. I said, no, that's what makes it awesome.
Yeah.
That's classic Gene. He's always a mess by the end of the show.
Yeah, it really was. It actually was way more worn off than usual. Like, it was it looked like it was just, it must have been really hot or something.
Probably humid, super hot.
Yeah, well, what a great concept that they wore the makeup way back when, and when they're 80 years old, they can wear the makeup and still kind of look like the same guys from the 70s, right?
That's kind of the beauty of it. I mean, eventually they'll be able to replace. I mean, I've been saying it for years, and they finally have kind of, you know, said it themselves that they will eventually replace themselves and just have, you know, we'll be like, grandkids will be going, we're going to go see Kiss, and you'll be like, Kiss?
Yeah. Now they've talked about that, but do you honestly think that would work? I mean, there's enough people that kind of, you know, say, okay, well, we're going to let, you know, the other two guys go because Gene and Paul are there. But could you imagine a Kiss without them if it's just the characters?
No. I mean, initially, like years ago, I thought they could probably do something like franchise it out. You know, like they could have like Kiss in Vegas on a regular basis here, just, you know, four guys and with understudies who come in. I'm doing Paul tonight, you know, or whatever. Yeah. Just, you know, guys
come. But I think that's kind of, they already have that with all the Kiss tribute bands out there. I mean, some of them are pretty spot on. Some of them are better than Kiss themselves. I mean,
well, I don't know. Yeah, you probably could find like sanctioned tribute bands, I suppose, or something like that. But I don't know. I think they probably, you know, I think they're certainly going to try it. They're certainly going to try for the first time. Well, not the first time ever, because there are bands out there with no original members, you know, I mean, like that is happening. Something like that, that's so visible, you know, I think from a
marketing standpoint though, I think Gene would have, I mean, I don't know if he'd ever be able to let that go, right?
They'll still be 100% involved. Trust me. They'll still be like from behind the scenes. But if you notice really closely, sometimes you'll see in a lot of the marketing now, it's the Demon, Star Child, Catman, Spaceman. There's no, it's rare, more and more rare now to see the actual names of the guys, because it's become like these four things are the thing. And that can live on. Like I said, you know, we'll be old and there'll be a Kiss.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I guess that's true, because the generation that grew up knowing them by name and knowing who they are behind that makeup, again, it's going to be resorting right back to the original, where it's kids that are growing up and seeing it, maybe don't even care. They just like the show and the idea, right?
It's been tested to 50% right now. You know what I mean? It's people are still going. People are still spending money to go see it. And, you know, at 50% of the original lineup. So, you know, you just take two more away and see what happens. I mean, it would still have to be great. And it would still have to be the show, you know. So I think you're right, though. I think a lot of young kids are going to be like, there's blood and fire and the tunes, you know. They can play Lick It Up. Great. You know, it's like, they don't really care if it's, you know,
well, and that's absolutely true. No, it's true. Because I mean, I remember taking my kids to see Kiss, and you know, I know people my age that won't go, and I'm sure we all have that one person or more that says, I was done after the original four. But honestly, I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, not a lot of people care. The show's still great, and I mean, what a production, right?
It's a little known fact that we replaced Phil X and no one noticed.
Exactly.
Just kidding. Now, right now, he's like gone. Like,
blip. So that being said, we're just shooting the shit, and I'm sure these are all topics that we could involve him in. So, who wants to do the introduction? Sure. I think this one's going to go to Brent.
Yeah, Brentley, please.
30 years ago, I met this guy. Wow. And the funny thing is, on New Year's Eve,
I was done after the original.
He was on my TV as I was sitting watching, flipping through New Year's Eve channels with Bon Jovi.
Was he on Hawaii 5-0?
Oh, sorry. I don't know, but it was one of those shows, and I felt pretty good to say, hey, look, there's Phil. So I've known him 30 years. This fine gentleman is definitely a guitar superstar and a humble Canadian, and probably the guy with the most energy that I've ever been on stage with. He's been in a lot of great bands, is currently in one of the biggest bands in the world, and has his own solo band as well, and is a coffee lover. So a real strong coffee in honor of Phil today. Let's welcome Phil X.
Just so people are clear, you were never a member of Took. We would be honored for you to be
I'm the only guy wearing a Took.
What happened there? Phil played with us a year ago.
Well played.
Phil, you played with us at NAMM. That was one of our last gigs. We actually got to play on stage together.
How fun was American Woman?
I know.
I was at the Gibson party, and I'm like, I gotta go. Slash is jamming with Billy Gibbons. I'm like, I know. I gotta go. I gotta play. So I took a cab to that hotel with my buddy, and then before I knew it, I was on stage. It was a lot of fun.
That was great.
Maybe you didn't know what you were getting into, but hopefully you enjoyed it. Maybe you didn't know what you were getting into with a Took show, but it was a room full of Canadians, and everybody knew every song, and it was a pretty epic night.
It was an epic night. Walking to the stage, it was like, there was a lot of people, like, you know, when they look at you, walk by, and they're like, he's here? I was like, I gotta go. The stage was
It was like more Canadians in Anaheim than there are in Canada all of a sudden. It was boom.
That really sucks, because you guys, that was an annual thing for you. And not only are you not doing it this year, there's absolutely no NAMM except for Cyber NAMM, I heard. Online NAMM thing. But
what is that? That would have been this month too, right? That was mid-January.
A couple of weeks, yeah.
So what do they anticipate? Does anybody know what that means? Cyber NAMM? I guess just like this?
I don't know. Somebody told me about it. Well, Gibson actually mentioned it, because they said, hey, we're launching a bunch of artists, guitars at Cyber NAMM, and then we'll also be doing it on our website. And I was like, wait, what did you just call it? Cyber NAMM? What the hell is that? And then I read today somewhere there's like 100 companies that are involved. And I don't know, man. It's like that's where you see your buddies from around the world.
Exactly.
And that's where you hang out and do a little bit of jamming and playing. And not only did I jam with you guys, but Brent and I played the Gibson booth Friday.
Was that the next night?
Was that?
Was that the next night?
The next. It was Saturday, I guess. Yeah.
Was that the drills?
It was like right before it closes, and then it was we had Derek St. Holmes get up with us, and we did Stranglehold. There was a short Stranglehold, because we only really had 20 minutes, so I didn't want to. But you know, I had a weird feeling about it at first, because even Brent was like, "Hey, Derek wants to get up," and I time travel when I hear Derek sing, man.
I know, right?
I hear him sing Stranglehold, and I'm dropping the needle on Double Life Gonzo and like when I'm elite. So, I mean, I love him as a person, and I love him. He still sounds, if not better than he did back then. And to say no, I was like, man, this is my kind of way of saying, hey, saying hey to everybody from being a new Gibson guy. I didn't want it to be like, hey, man, it's me and I need help.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want it to be that. And I explained it to him later. But then when I looked over side stage and he's standing there with a big smile on his face, I'm like, fuck, dude, get a guitar. Let's do it.
Absolutely.
So I have to say, though, okay, it's always best being the drummer, because you have the best seat in the house. And there was a lot of fucking people there. Like, the Gibson booth was so massive, and there's a lot of anticipation leading up to that. And I mean, when you came out, there was like mouths dropping as you were playing. And I just kind of like, I had a great time playing with you, but I also had a great time observing that all these people were like, holy fuck, it was pretty epic, you know, on a Friday at NAMM. But I kind of selfishly was like, all I knew was that we've just like, this was an incredible, you know, the first however many songs we did. And I just kind of saw Derek in the side. I go, oh, this is going to just take it up a notch. And I don't know. I just kind of put my life on the line with you. And I was like, we got to get Derek up. Cause you were kind of like, no, because you were, like you said, you were not trying to mess with, you know, Gibson was kind enough to have you play, but I think it was kind of a highlight NAMM for me that capped off the rest of the weekend. You know, the gig before was awesome with Tuke, but that was pretty, pretty awesome.
And everybody that, after we played, everybody from Gibson was like, there was 500 people outside trying to get in the booth. Mm-hmm. Wow. And you should be thrilled, worth thrilled. You know, it's funny, like I'm really bad at reading faces. Like when I go on stage, like people are like, man, everybody's jaw dropped. And I'm like, yeah, but is it really dropping or are they like kind of bored? You know?
Nah. Especially at NAMM, you know, people know they want guitar. They want to be loud. Sure. And sure. I mean, it is the perfect stage for you, Phil. I mean, and we did a gig even 2 days before. Remember we opened the night we were over at the,
we were kind of the headliner. We had to replace somebody. Richie Kotzen was supposed to do it, and then he didn't do it, and then they called me, and we went in with the drills. And then there was a jam that happened after. So it was,
that's right.
But it was a guitar night. You know, it was one of those NAMM guitar nights. Like, I remember guitar nights. I was fortunate to be, like, I've been probably going to NAMM for, like, 30 years. So I was there when it was like, hey, we got three guys jamming tonight for Ernie Ball, and it's Eddie Van Halen, Steve Morris, and Albert Lee.
Wow.
And they're like, well, I'm a huge Eddie fan, and I love Steve Morris. Who's this Albert Lee guy? But when you leave, you're like, okay, so Albert Lee kind of like wiped the floor with both those guys?
Wow.
That was a good NAMM night. Yeah.
Yeah, I bet.
I think NAMM, for me, was the most important. When I got into the States in January 96, were you at that NAMM? Any of you guys, had you gone to NAMM yet?
Uh-huh. 96? Yeah. No.
I think I met you there, Fitz, at one of those early NAMMs.
With all of us Canadians here on Tuke Talk today, you win the prize, Shane. You got to LA first, right?
Well, yeah, I guess it was 93 when I came down to MI, but I would have met you at NAMM like 95 or 96. I remember that.
Yeah.
Really early on. And you were talking about coming down or you had come down.
What year did you go out, Brent?
I got January 96 was my first time in LA. Wow. And what happened was I stayed after NAMM because my old bass player, Scott Gaines, from my Winnipeg band, Seventh Heaven, who was originally from LA, was who I randomly bumped into with all the, you know, 100,000 people at NAMM. Wow. And he was like, oh my God, I haven't seen you in so long. Why don't you, you know, hang out, stay at my house for a little while in the sunny, you know, California weather, because it's obviously freezing cold in Winnipeg. So I was like, that's it, I'm staying. And I was with Howard Klopak and Dave Cousins, two friends, and you know, Howard works for us doing sound for Tuke. And that was it. I just stayed, and you know how it is. You just kind of figure it out from there. But I do remember, Phil, and we could talk about first time I met you was a long time before that, but I also remember the first time I saw you, because I'd met you previously in Canada, but I saw you either at NAMM the next year. I hadn't met you at NAMM the year I got there, but or we ran into each other at the Rainbow or something with some mutual friends. And I was so happy. I was like, aha, Phil lives here now too.
And then now we were like, I'm like, you know this guy? And you're like, of course. And you're like, you know this guy? And I'm like, of course. And like, we were talking.
What year was that, Phil? What year did you come to?
I actually moved to LA in 97.
Oh, okay. Wow. So a long time ago. Wow.
So it was a long time ago. And then the first band that I put together had Jason Hook and Jeremy Spencer in it.
Wow.
And Dan played bass, who was in the drills. Yeah. And my ex-wife was the singer. So that was like the first thing that we kind of put together. But I mean, there's so many versions of so many bands, and even the drills, we've had like 1,000 drummers.
I'm one of them. Do you remember, Phil? It would have been like late 90s ish, I came over to your house. It was right before you had Powder put together. Do you remember that? I came to your house and we hung out.
with your, I don't know if you were married at that point, or was you guys were together, living together? And it was like Los Feliz or Silver Lake, or were you living over there somewhere?
Los Feliz. Where, who did you come with?
Myself.
Really?
Yep. You remember that?
Was it, you were in a mask? Was it a home invasion? Kind of looking for a drummer.
Oh, yes. We were looking for a drummer. For
I think that's what it was. It was kind of like you're in the initial stages of putting powder together.
Yeah.
So it's safe to say, Shane, you didn't get the gig?
I didn't get the gig.
Yeah.
I think I was, it was right around the time I was doing Ingve. What year was that?
I think powder was like
98?
99.
Okay.
2000. Because I was working on Methods of Mayhem at Scott's studio.
I think it was, right around then. So like late 90s-ish. And it was just that we hung out and.
Yeah. And we were a different band before it became Powder. And I think even Glenn Zola was drumming.
Yeah. I think it was, before it was actually Powder, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But did you get right into it, Phil? Like you moved to LA. And then studio stuff right away, getting calls probably through a producer or like studios, how did it?
Studios took a while, but we moved in May and booked the Roxy in June. And we didn't even have a band. We booked it first and then got a drummer and our buddy D. Cerneil from Svengali. Played bass.
Crazy.
And we found a drummer from the UK who was playing in another band that we saw somewhere. And it was one of those, wow, you're great. Here's our CD. Want to check it out? Maybe play drums for us? And it was like, he listened to it the next day and said, I'm playing. So, and then in 3 weeks, we played the Roxy. So how it happened was pretty quick. But we were really good like that. We were really driven. And we had an agenda. Like everybody else when you move to LA.
What were you doing just before that though? Just to back up, were you in
Canada?
Triumph or Frozen Ghost or something? What gig was like? Did you
so Frozen leave or Ghost was like 88, 89, maybe even 87? I'm not sure. And then Alanova was 90, 91. Oh wait, yeah. And then back to Frozen Ghost for a bit, and then Triumph.
Dude, I got to know about Triumph, because that's crazy. Rick Emmett, you replace Rick Emmett.
That's pretty nuts, right?
Amazing. I was a huge Triumph fan, like the early Triumph stuff. I was way into that.
Yeah,
totally. Like, one of the first songs we ever learned with my band was Rock and Roll Machine.
Yeah, so see, I favored the Gil songs when I was a Triumph fan. You know, I thought Late on the Line was a great song. Fight the Good Fight was a great song. But I hated Magic Power and Hold On and that fucking fluty gay shit. But
did you have to sing that stuff?
No. So the cool thing about that, I mean, later on, now the Triumph fans are going to hate me. the cool thing about, when I saw the Sporty Kings tour,
okay,
and so that record, they did that record, and then when they toured that record, they got Rick Sanders in the band as the fourth play second guitar, sing backgrounds, and play keys and stuff, right? Yeah. So when we did our version of Triumph, we took Rick with us again. So Rick Sanders sang the Emmett songs. He sang the shit out of Late on the Line.
But Rick's really great.
He's got this high range, and the thing about his range that I learned about him is his voice sounds the same wherever he sang. Yeah. Like I sound one way when I sing low, and I sound different when I sing high. And then there's my break; I can fuck off. But sounds the same everywhere. I was like, "How do you do that?" Like, I don't know. It's like, lucky bastard. But
he was very great.
Oh yeah, and he's a great guitar player too. And it was funny because we split up the guitar duties for the old songs and stuff. And I'd be there was one song, Spellbound, that has a killer like groove. And Gil's like, "Hey, why don't you guys like split up the solo?" I go, this was mine. Rick was like, "What? I call it." And then Gil was like, "What? that does sound like good rhythm track to like solo over. I'm like, glad you recognize. But
right.
It seemed like a longer thing than it was. It was a record that came out and 11 shows, and then that was it. Because okay. The deal that they signed went south. Some people have the record, and some people couldn't get the record because the record company was like, well, fuck you guys. And we're taking all our records and putting them in a warehouse and lighting them on fire. And it was like,
oh my God. Wow.
Like, I have the record. It's over my CDs over there, but it'll take me too long to grab it.
There's some good songs on it. There's some good.
The fact that you made a record, that's what's great. You made a triumph. Right? Cool.
Yeah. And there was a guy that I met in LA who was a friend that came out to a show at the gig on Melrose. And he was like, he knew my name was Phil. That was it. But he also knew that I was from Canada. So he was like, hey, I'm from Buffalo. I know you're from Canada. I know a lot of Canadian bands. Who'd you play with? And I said, I played with Aldo Nova and I played with Triumph. And he's like, Triumph? Was that before? Relax. Dude, he was like, what? That's my favorite Triumph record. And they finally had a good guitar tone, and because he was a guitar player, that kind of thing.
That's great. Oh,
that's awesome.
So it was pretty funny.
Hey, so I have to, so I remember when you were telling me about this. So you said Frozen Ghost was before Aldo, and then you were in Frozen Ghost again. But I did see you in the 80s with Frozen Ghost. So I didn't talk to you. I was probably a little intimidated. So I'm sure I'm like 18 at the time, but anyone not from Winnipeg, I was intimidated by. And you were from Toronto. So that was like, you know, prairie guys are like, oh, he's from the big city.
Yeah.
But,
city yeah. folk.
Yeah. Dude, I talked to Arnold Laney on the phone today.
Oh, wow.
You did?
Wow. Yeah. We were like catching up and sharing our, our lockdown stories, but we still communicate, we still talk and stuff, and it's funny because he'll be recording with somebody and a kid will be like, yeah, I really like Bill X. And Arnold's like, oh, I know him, and they're like, yeah. Like the guy that gave me my first break, he has to say, I know him now, you know.
That's great. Is Arnold still in Ontario? Is he still in?
No, he's actually in California. Like,
he's in California. Okay.
Yeah, he's been in California for a long time.
Like, wow, I didn't know that.
Somewhere near Temecula. Yeah.
Huh. I believe he or somebody posted on his behalf that he had heard our version of "When I'm With You." Is that correct, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. His personal
assistant.
God, or an assistant, yeah.
Well, I'm sure Todd could sing the shit out of that. Come on.
Well, with helium, I have a helium machine. That's how I do all the Getty shit, too.
The thing about that singer, what I want to say is not only did he have this range, but he could hold any note, any length.
Yeah.
And I was like, come on, dude. How you?
Yeah, I know.
How's that possible? That's not possible.
I know. Enough already. Like, we get it. Like, you're killing us over here. But it's so funny because as a singer, I always say this. It's like we grow up, we listen to these people that we love, and we go, I want to sing. You know, you go on stage to sing Highway to Hell or something like that. And that's just the way Bond sang. He wasn't killing himself to sing like that. That's just the way Bond sang. And then all of us in high school are killing ourselves singing AC/DC and, you know, screaming our heads off until we learn how to do it. You know, it's like,
yeah, but okay. So
like that,
I'm going to ask you, cause you're a great singer and you have an incredible range, and I've heard you sing everything. And I
keep going, like, keep going.
I feel like, it took you later in life to get that range, didn't it? Because I have this range now that I was dreaming I had when I was 18, 19, 20. And then it kind of like, you know, when you're playing the clubs and you're doing 3 45-minute sets and you forget, you don't have pacing yourself down yet, so you're giving it and losing your voice. And then once you stop losing your voice, then your range kind of gets higher and higher. I mean, that's how it happened for me, but did you always have that?
You're absolutely correct in that, like, as I get older, the way more control and way more just sort of like, you just kind of know, like, what you can do and what you can't do and what, how this is going to go and how that's going to, when you're younger, it's just like you're throwing darts in the air, just kind of hoping it lands anywhere close, you know?
So, exactly.
And the screaming high stuff, you know, like when we were kids, you know, you were trying to sing all this crazy high stuff. Then the 90s came around and that became almost sort of like,
that's it.
You know, well, it became kind of like ridiculous if you were singing like that in, yeah, in a way. So then you kind of find a new way to do it. And then you come out the other side of this going like, you know, if you have the ability to do that, then you're kind of lucky. And I think that it really is, because I don't know what I don't know the actual technical talk about it. I mean, I know when I'm in my head voice, I know when it's a chest voice, that kind of stuff. But I talk to a lot of guys who you know, Miles Kennedy and guys like that who have a lot of training, and I kind of stroke my beard like, oh, okay. You know, it is weird as you get older.
I don't think every technique is for every singer.
That's true.
I think it's all about knowing your instrument. Because we had like a vocal instructor on, like John Bon Jovi's vocal coach would come on the road with us. And he'd be like, hey guys, just so you know, Mary Jo's here for everybody, not just me. So if anybody wants a singer. So in the first couple of weeks, everybody takes a vocal lesson, right? Mm-hmm. But Phil doesn't. Because I feel like if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So, but John, he's Dean. We have a chiropractor on the road, and he also trains John and runs with him when he wants to run. So he's my coffee boy. So in the morning we get up and we have coffee, and he's like, so John, why you're not taking a vocal lesson? And I'm like, what? He goes, hey, he wants to know. I don't know, man. And he's like, I told him, I said, you know, maybe he thinks it's, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And then John's like, what? Like, he's the best singer in the world? Like, there's no room for improvement? Like, he's you know, there's always room for improvement. No matter what you play, what instrument you play, no matter seeing what you're talking about, there's always room for improvement. But I have my thing down for this gig.
Sure.
And I don't want to mess with it.
Well, yeah. I think you're right, because when you learn, I always say it's kind of like learning street fighting. You know, you learn to fight on the street. You know what you can do. I can beat this guy this way. And like anything, when you're up and running and someone says, okay, well, let's go back and learn how to crawl. You're like, whoa, what are you talking about? This is like right. 30 exactly. years of street fighting. And you want me to learn how to like do a kata, you know, this kind of, you know, I'm like, that's not going to happen at this point. Yeah. I mean, it's certainly, and most guys, and I think that John and Axel, anybody really, any of them, they kind of came into their game, and then the training became more about like, how do I do this for the next 6 months on the road or whatever? Because that's the true test is the ability to kind of find yourself having to sing like at the peak of your ability every single night. It's not easy. It's tough.
But it's also, like I said, it's like knowing your instrument, because Celine Dion has a different instrument than Robin Zander.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So with me, her... You know, then Mary Jo's calling my room going, hey, I got to give you a lesson because John's wondering why you're not. And I'm like,
really?
Wow. But okay, how about 4 o'clock tomorrow? So I do one the next day. And she goes, if you could fix something, what would it be? I go, well, my break sucks. You know, if I have to hang out on a G sharp for a whole song or maybe two songs in a row, I'm fatigued and I can't sing anything else.
Right.
Like, well, let me help you with that. And she shows me a bunch of exercises.
Interesting.
The next day, I get on stage, and everything that was effortless up until this point is now hard work. I'm like, what the fuck?
Is it because you started thinking about it more, or like?
No, see, I felt tired. I felt like exercises made me feel like I sang for 8 days in a row.
Wow.
Yeah. So I felt like it's obviously this is worse for some people. Everett, our background singer and percussion player, he said that she helped him tremendously. I'm gonna turn this light on. It's getting dark.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. Todd, you've never had a lesson in your life though, have you?
Now let's talk shit about him while he's out of the shop. No, I've never really taken any, but I will, you know, I've blown my voice out on several occasions and been like laid out. You know, but I think the older you get, the more, like Phil was saying, learning to pace yourself, or learning that, like, well, I got tomorrow off, you know, I'll just go a little extra tonight and then, like, kind of kick it. You know, it depends. It's, you know, it's been a long time, except for Tuke, really, you know, playing with Miles, same as Phil, because Phil, as a lead singer, then you find yourself playing with John, and you're singing a great deal of the night. You're carrying all the high harmonies. Different than singing lead a whole show.
But you're in the same position where, like, when you're singing backgrounds, you have to put on your background voice. And then when you're singing lead, you got to put on your lead voice. Like, you know, the first couple of times that I did, you know, the Richie Wanted parts in Wanted Dead or Alive, I mean, we're going way back to 2011. And, you know, and somebody walk up to me and go, hey, man, could you clean that up a little bit? And I'm like, no. I just can't. And then, like,
right, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I know what you mean, because there is sort of, you know, but the funny thing about that dynamic that you're speaking of, I think, is the thing that Richie's voice is so much a part of that era. You know, when you hear those songs and you kind of go, you know, it's not that every once in a while you hear those songs and you go, well, yeah, he's back there singing his ass off. So it really puts you in a position. You're more than qualified to do all those parts. But is it sort of like you have to kind of take it down a notch, or can you come in there and hit it hard, or what?
No, I try to keep it. I try to keep it more true to what people expect. Like, I can't sound like Richie at all, but I can hit the note and make it. If it has to sound sweet, I could try to make it sound sweeter. And if it's you know, like, he's got a great voice. You know, and
he does. Yeah, he's great.
With guitar, for years I've been saying, if this was Richie and this is Phil X, there's a guy in the middle that shows up and does the gig, because I can't play exactly like Richie. And then if somebody asks me what's the hardest Bon Jovi song I had to learn, the answer is it's nothing's been really hard, but sometimes it's hard to have the inflection or the emotion intended with that part. Like, it's not about nailing every note at the beginning of Bed of Roses. It's about making somebody weep.
Right.
Yeah.
There's an emotional aspect. And there is, you know, when you, a gig like that, where you step in and there's just a ton of history already involved. You walk in and people have gotten married to these songs. They've made out for the first time to these, you know what I'm saying? All these experiences. Then you walk on stage and play these songs and everybody's having that experience. It's like when you listen to, like, the Beatles or something like that, and it brings all these emotions. And that happens in, whether it's the Guns N' Roses catalog or the Shania Twain catalog or Bon Jovi catalog. It's like, these are important to people, and you can't suddenly go up there and go, well, I'm going to double tap the solo for, you know, you know, for whatever, and wank off and have it just, like, kind of ruin the show. But I mean, obviously there's moments where they probably let you do your thing. Like, that's, you know, a little bit free form over there.
And a lot of people really did. I'm like, Keep the Faith is one of those moments where I just go off, and I approach my, like, if Phil, true 100% Phil X, I'd probably get to, like, 80-85%, because it was funny. The first time I filled in for Bon Jovi, I was, you know, I had a friend just walk up to me and said, look, just so I've seen you play, I've seen you with the drills, and just remember, don't take attention away from the guy at the band.
I'm
like, that's good advice.
You also get a solo spot too, right? Like, where it's just you. Because I remember seeing some clips of you, like, out on, like, the, you know, the long
walk.
Catwalk thing, and you're just out there soloing in front of 80,000 people.
Yeah, dude, there's a really cool picture. It's really funny, because we, you know, John really gave me a lot of, he'll leave the stage when we do the, like, the end of the Keep the Faith thing, and then it's go nuts, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a situation where I just, you know, and I try to make it a feely thing. Like, I don't write a solo and then go out on stage and play it. I want it to be what I'm feeling that moment. So I want to be in the moment, whether it's 80,000 people. It's kind of risky in front of 80,000 people because sometimes your heart's right and sometimes your heart's wrong. I feel like, you know, it's, but I've always been like that with the drills, and I've always been like that with, you know, sometimes you play something and the next day you watch a video and you have to rewind what you played because you don't remember doing it and how,
sure,
how it just made you feel. So that's kind of an amazing thing too, but that's what being a musician is all about, right?
It's supposed to be. I imagine that's kind of, it's kind of rare these days in a lot of cases, but that's amazing that you can just kind of like you say, just kind of like dive in and see where it takes you. I think that's awesome. You have that moment that you can do that.
You know,
you can watch Slash do that for like, you can watch Slash do that for about half an hour with us.
I mean, it's the most authentic place you can be as a musician. If you can, if you have that moment where you just let go of it and just, it's just coming from here. I mean, that's the most beautiful thing we ever.
Is there actually like 16 bars or something like that? Or is it kind of like just play and then cue somebody and then you're done? Or how does that work?
We have a set and keep the faith, especially. It's kind of like, it's a thing where a certain amount of bars, then David Bryan does a certain amount of bars, and then Shanks does a certain amount of bars, and then we all end together. So that's one of those jammy things. But the funny thing about that is I've gone completely nuts and spent every piece of energy that I have on this moment. And then sometimes the song list is an acoustic song right after. So I'm like, everything's on fire and the skin is crawling and I've got goosebumps in the air, the arm hair is burning. And then I go to change guitars and he comes up with an acoustic and I'm like, okay, hold on a second.
I need to meditate first.
Yeah. Exactly. You got to come down. Yeah.
It's true.
You got to really, I can't play the crew. Whose idea was this? So it's one of those things, but you know, there's a couple of times that the fans get really involved. So, the last tour in Europe last year, there was some moments like, there's a really famous live Rich DeSambora live solo for Always. So, and I'm really aware of that. Like in 2013, you know, and this is when you're saying the length, I'm like, all right, if I'm in my band and I'm doing a long solo, I've said what I want to say. I'm done. I turn around, cue everybody, we end the song. When John's driving the bus, I've said everything I want to say. I'm done. I look at John and he goes,
keep going.
What?
Say it again.
Now I've said everything I meant to say. What? And then now you took totally, you go from erect to, okay, thanks.
Best analogy ever. Best analogy ever.
I started pacing myself and I had to watch John's body language to see if he wanted me to keep going or not keep going. And then I nailed it one night, and this was way back when, and a guy named Takumi, who's still a great friend, and he was checking for me. And we have he can talk to me in my in ears and stuff like that. I'm sure you guys have that too. And I was done the solo and I backed up to the drum riser, and he literally reached under the scrim and grabbed my ankle and yelled, "That was fucking amazing!"
Takumi worked with Prince for a long time.
He worked with Prince. He worked with Angus. Mm. He was Richie's guy, which he became my guy by default. But he still works with Richie. So,
right.
But it's kind of funny when you think about all that stuff with it. You don't think it's happening. I love playing with Tico. I love when I'm doing the solo to Always now. We got to a point where I would follow his fill or he would follow what I was doing. And that just made it more magical for me. I thought, wow, this is like, you know, we're really talking as a band. This is not you're in your world and I'm in my world and we'll see what happens. This is really paying attention. And I love that. And I think that's the Canadian in me, paying attention.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right.
All the jamming.
I'm sorry. I wasn't paying attention to what you were saying. Yeah. But, just kidding.
I mean, we spent so much time as kids, like playing together in a room, you know, in basements, you know, all of us. And I'm sure the same with you too, Phil. It was like, we listened and we played together in a room. That was it. There was no fucking in-ear monitor or anything, clicks. It was just, let's just play. And for hours and days and weeks. You know,
and you're 17, and the first time that your drummer nails the live version of Working Man by Ride. And you're so busy being blown away, you forget that you're supposed to be soloing. And you're like, I think all the great musicians in the world were in cover bands.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The Beatles. The Beatles were a cover band. Beatles,
Van Halen.
The Stones.
They all played covers, right? So, I mean, that's a good clue.
Right.
Of how to become a musician that's really aware of what's happening around them.
Yeah. I think you learn a lot about, I've said this before to the guys too, you learn a lot about song structure when you're playing like cover songs. You know, okay, well, there's an intro and then they start the verse and there's a pre-chorus, of course, and you kind of learn that kind of stuff just by playing a million songs. Yeah.
And why that melody works over this chord progression and why that harmony sounds so killer. You learn so much. And then, you know, when I was a kid, I had an AM radio and it was all pop songs. So I
100%.
I'm like, oh man, these songs. That's why I'm a chorus guy to this day. I love a good, strong chorus.
Yeah, no doubt. And Bon Jovi has some strong choruses, I'll tell you that.
Oh, man. The drill stuff, though, Phil, the drill stuff is just oozing pop melody. That's what's great.
Absolutely.
Right? Seriously.
I write like I want to listen to. I'm a huge fan of, like I said, pop music and choruses, but I love aggressive instrumentation, and I love tongue-in-cheek lyrics. So my lyrics like way tongue-in-cheek. Like I wanted to be interpretive. That's why, I mean, I love when people go, hey, what does that lyric mean? I go, I'm like, what does it mean to you? And then they tell me something that I didn't even think of. I'm like, you know, that's better than my story. I'm gonna
use that, yeah.
And then you have that, and then you have, you know, I mean, I love going out. Like, it was... we wanted to take Brent to the UK when we went in March, but obviously we couldn't. But
I had a Took gig, honestly. Otherwise, I would have. But we had a big Telemiracle gig in March. And you had a whole tour booked.
But it was, you know, just going out there, it was so fun and so just, you know. And the funny thing, I was doing press. So we had our manager hook us up with all kinds of press. So I'd be doing an interview between soundcheck and the show. And they're like, so, wow, so you're doing this. And then you're on tour with Bon Jovi in June. So this was before the shutdown. And so what's the big difference? I'm like, well, I'm in a van, 200 people every night, and sharing hotel rooms. And in June, it's a jet and arenas again.
But both are okay.
I love both. I mean, I feel fortunate and blessed that I get to create on both canvases. It's like they both do. They both make my blood flow. You know, it's awesome.
Of course, yeah, you have to have that. Yeah. What were you going to
say?
Keep
you grounded as well.
We cut you.
Well, I was going to say we were talking. No, that's fine. I like the stories. I was just saying that we were talking about obviously this year being a little bit of a different year and going through the process of releasing the new record. How has the reception been to 2020? And of course, you know, with the, you know, what have you guys been doing or is there, what can you be doing to?
Well, John is always thinking about things that he can do. Like, so in August, I came here to Nashville. I was still living in LA at the time. And we had this, he just had a concept. Let's go to iHeart. They want us to do something. So we'll do a little iHeart performance for them. But then we'll come back the next day and shoot a bunch of stuff. One could be the performance of the new record, Top to Bottom, which ended up being called, it was like a documentary called On a Night Like This, which aired on Facebook, of all places, about a month ago. And it got, John hit everybody the next day and said, hey, we got a million views on that. Wow. Control, guys. You know, but at the same time, they took other episodes of what we shot, and one was sent to Ellen, and one was sent to Stephen Colbert, and all it was all done right. at the same time. Mm. And I mean, he's always thinking about things that can take it to another level. And I really, you know, he told stories in between the songs, and I think a lot of people connect to that. He's because he, for the rock star that he is, he becomes, you know, very vulnerable and expresses what he's feeling. And a lot of it had to do with, you know, the whole COVID situation and how this turned out to be a mess in most cases. But I mean, I'm always a positive guy myself, and I always have this, it could be worse, philosophy, but there was a week where every morning it was worse. But at least now I can laugh about it, you know? But it's the same thing, you know, this whole thing delayed the release of that, it released of the Drills for Stupid Good Lookings Volume 2. But that, I think that delay worked in our favor because we were going to put out 6 songs on Volume 2 because there were 6 songs on Volume 1. But we're actually, and this happened last week, we decided to just put 10 songs on Volume 2 and just...
Cool.
Just, I feel like people like a lot of content, but not all at the same time. But it's also an anything goes kind of time, you know?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Did you get a chance to see Corey's Bon Jovi performance on Kelly Clarkson?
I did not. Where'd you guys play?
What song did you play?
It's My Life.
Nice. Did you use a talk box?
I did, yep.
Nice.
So cool. It was the day that John was on as a guest, virtually.
Nice.
And Kelly sang It's My Life as the opening song for the show.
Did you play that Frampton? Wah, 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 wah. Wah, 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 wah,
wah, wah. Yeah. Yeah, it was fun.
Did you have any cavities?
What's that?
Do you have any cavities?
Cavities, no. Well, I do, but they're like porcelain. Okay. Like
one. Apparently, if you have like cavities, the talk box rattles them.
Wow.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
No so, fun.
I mean, if you bite down on it, I guess. But
yeah, probably.
You know, okay, so it was funny. When I was in Aldo Nova, he's the guy who showed me how to use a talk box. Because it was okay, so you got to use a talk box for Monkey on Your Back, and you got to use a talk box for the new song on Blood on the Bricks. And then I'm playing it, and he goes, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "What? I'm using the talk box." "That's not how you use a talk box." And he's like, he's explaining the theory, and not only the theory, but dude, it's your mouth takes the place of the speaker and the shape and the hose and he's explaining, and then he gets on it, and I totally hear the difference between his tone and my tone. So, oh, okay, I get it. So then from that point on, that's how I got it down pretty good. And then I see other guys playing talk box and go, "You suck."
I don't think I've ever even been around one, ever really seen on stage.
I have. I've never played it, though. I've never actually liked
it. So it's basically like, "Hey, want to try it? I just spit in it 8 times."
That's the thing. You know, if you borrow someone's talk box, it's not, you know, really don't want to do that because it's like,
this is funny because I geek out over this shit, and I went to Home Depot and got a hose that was a little thinner than the talk box hose. So that means that you cut this and then you put a fresh new piece of plastic in every night.
Oh, yeah, right.
Good idea.
That's great, yeah.
That's a great idea.
And actually, it did come that way with a little piece that you could wash, so that's cool. Or replace. Hey,
what about this? So a girl from Winnipeg writes a song that Kelly Clarkson records that Phil plays on.
It all goes back to Winnipeg, Phil. Hold on.
It does.
I'm sorry. It does. That, Corey, you've been playing for years.
Yeah, I was going to ask you.
Know that Phil played on it?
I knew he played on some Kelly stuff, but I don't know which ones. Was it the Chantel song or something else? Yeah.
Chantel Kraviazic is the...
Wait, it was Walk Away. Was that it?
Oh, Walk Away.
Yeah.
That was one of my favorite songs to play, actually, because we always did a extended solo intro to that song and ending.
Oh, it was so good. Rain Maida produced it.
Chantel, her husband.
Rain produced it, and he goes, "I think we should put a solo in this." And I'm like, "Okay, let's do it." So I put a solo in it, and it was one of those things, like when I solo, even if I'm in the studio, it's like I'm on stage. So Rain sees me solo and he goes, "Shut down. You gotta see this." "You just watch him solo." So I do another solo and she's like, "What the hell?" I'm like, "Come on, you can do that." She goes, "Oh, I can't do that." So it was, but the sad part was Rain called me the following week and said, "Kelly came and her brother, who's a huge Eddie Van Halen fan, they listened to your solo and they freaked out." And I'm like, "Fuck, this is great." That's not the sad part. The sad part is 2 days later. So Clive ixnayed the solo.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no solo in it in the version that we learned. And in fact, there were almost no solos in any of that stuff, which is kind of the sign of the times, you know. Anytime there was no singing, people aren't going to be concentrating. So you got to cut out anything that's musical and just have the singing. Not that singing is not musical.
Exactly. That's why there's so much singing in all these
podcasts. Right.
And I actually became self-conscious of soloing at that point. You know, just in general, in putting it in my own songs, I'm like, "Oh, it's not fashionable. You can't have a solo anymore."
Yeah, I think everybody did that.
There were just a couple of bars.
Bar anymore because you sound like Steve Vai, and you can't tap because that's a passe. And then no solos at all. Or then I was doing sessions, and I'd play, and not even soloing, just play the rhythm and accurate and in time and that and in tune. And the producer would go, "Can you play that again, but like you can't play?"
Shittier. And what's with that good tone when you need a crappy tone here?
There was a minute there where it was like just the octave, you know, you'd play four bars and it would just be, and you'd be like,
that was the solo.
Octave. Yeah.
Octaves.
Or the melody, or the first melody in the solo,
One of the best ones was when Aaron produced the first Our Lady Peace record. And he called me and he said, "We've been trying to figure out a solo for this one song for like 18 hours. Can you just come in tomorrow?" Because they're trying to keep it a band. It's a young band, a new sound. It was a great record.
And
it was in the song was in 6/8 time. So I guess that's why it was kind of like muddling up the guitar player. So I went in and just, "Okay, what's that? Oh, that's the whammy bar. Take that off. Okay, what's that? Okay, don't use that. Go." but a couple of takes, and it was exactly what Rain stood up like he was like there was a goal at a football game. And, and I'm like, "Oh, you like that?" He goes, "That was awesome." And that was, "Okay, you're done. Thanks. See ya."
That's great.
So it was, and then it was funny because Mike Turner was a guitar player at the time. And again, they wanted it to be a band. So even though John Bavette from Frozen Ghost played a lot of the drums, he didn't get any credit. And then Tony Springer, a Toronto guitar player, played some guitar on it. He didn't get credit. And I didn't get credit for my solo until Mike Turner left the band. And then they put it on Wikipedia or something. Then let's put it on Wikipedia. So it's kind of funny, though, because, I mean, you guys must have done the same kind of thing. You're like, the guitar player or the bass player or the drummer leaves and you come in and kind of replace shit and they call it like ghosting.
Exactly.
Been there many times. Yep.
That happens.
So
it's usually because of your friend, the producer, who knows you really well.
The music industry. Right now you're telling everybody all the secrets of the trade. You know, you're not supposed to tell everybody how to saw somebody in half during the magic trip. Don't tell them that. But it's true. A lot of your favorite. Yeah, exactly. A lot of your favorite records are often sometimes not the guy you think is playing. You know, it's like
that happens.
I don't want to hear that about Kiss.
It's true. I watched a big Kiss documentary.
Stop.
It's a lot.
I can't believe. Yeah, all the stories that they were saying on there.
There's actually,
speaking of which, you could touch a little bit on Hired Guns, you know, which you were part of as well.
That was great.
That was really great. Yeah.
That was really interesting. I mean, seeing everybody else's story too. I mean, when people came up to me and they go, "Hey, I just watched The Hired Gun." I go, "What'd you think?" "You seem like the only happy guy."
Wow, that puts it in, like, the liberty. the Liberty DeVito stories and all those, some very interesting stuff in there, you know?
I found it was like a really, like an emotional roller coaster, but yeah. I think it did its job in like kind of letting, if somebody wanted to get into being a side guy or session work, it kind of gave you the gist.
Yeah.
You know, it's not easy.
No.
I can't imagine Liberty's life getting better after that documentary, though. It didn't come off well, I didn't think.
I agree with you, and I think they put a lot of focus on that, but I feel like they've been talking.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think him and Billy have been in talk.
That's crazy.
Putting the original band together and stuff. So,
that'd be cool.
Didn't make it, but
right.
That's kind of cool. I mean, it's kind of surprising. You know, yeah. I was told that Billy put a cease and desist order on some of the footage.
Oh, wow.
The director was like, well, you actually don't own it.
Right, so, right, yeah.
Yeah, really.
Good luck. Yeah.
So, and we should just clarify. So Netflix has that movie on, Hired Gun, in case people are like, what are you guys talking about? So that's on Netflix currently, and you can watch it.
And it's all about musicians who play in other things, who hire, you know.
I actually...
Is that on Netflix Canada?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
I don't know if it is.
I don't think it is.
Question.
They have different shows, yeah.
They have a different Netflix?
You need a VPN.
Yeah,
it's different.
I do want to say that, you know, knowing everybody pretty much in, well, most of the, or having worked with the guys, including yourself, Phil, in the Hired Gun movie, including Rudy Sarzo, who I've played with, you know, several times, and Derek St. Holmes, and of course our good friend Jason Hook, who did produce the movie. But I think my underlying what I do know, and it's always not just being a hired guy or being the best guy for the gig, but who knows you?
Yes,
right.
Who knows you is a really, really important that people need to know. And like everybody here on Took Talk today, we've all had an opportunity because someone, you know, either saw us or looked out for us because, you know, gave an opportunity and threw us a bone basically, but you had to be able to deliver. And I know that indirectly, cause like I said, I met you a long time ago, Phil. And when I saw you with Aldo Nova in 91, I know that there has to be a reason that John Bon Jovi had to have known about you, not just one day in 2013 when you got a call for a gig, right? Which is the most important call, because when you do get a call, you have to be able to get on the plane and nail the fucking gig that day.
Yeah.
But there's always a little bit like something you did 10, 20 years ago that set up an opportunity. And when the time comes, then you're ready to go when someone goes, hey, I fucking need you today to do this gig in the studio or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, I think I gotta, even though I recorded on Levon in 1991 in John's basement studio for the two rooms on John Bernie Taupin, I don't think he remembered me. I really don't. I think when he was in a situation where he needed somebody on the sidelines, just in case, I think there was a couple of situations where Richie couldn't perform and John didn't want to be in a situation where he'd have to cancel a show or a television performance or something. So he called John Shanks, who had produced a bunch of stuff. So this all happened all within 2 weeks. John didn't know who I was. Wow. I mean, Shanks didn't know who I was. But then he had a studio at Tencent at the time. As I was in Studio D working on a project, and he just walked up to me and said, "You are funny as fuck." And I'm like, I couldn't stop watching your YouTube videos last night, man. Because, you know, he's a guitar collector. So he stumbled on a Fretted Americana, saw a bunch of my stuff. He goes, "It sounds like you can sing and play anything, too. Nice to meet you. Da, 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 da." 2 weeks later, "I think I have a gig for you, but I can't tell you what over the phone. Can you come to my studio tomorrow?" And I'm like, okay. He's like, "So they're going to put you on hold to, like, sit in for Richie Sambora." And I'm like, "Wait, what?" Like, it came out like that.
Wow.
And it was, I'm misunderstanding what's happening here. He goes, "Well, they're in a situation where they might need someone to fill in. And that doesn't even make sense. How can anybody fill in? How is that possible? That was my whole mentality. But it wasn't no audition, no nothing. Here's the contract. Here's the statement of confidentiality. This is the less to learn. And I was like just blown away. So
wow.
The thing is, and what you're absolutely correct about is showing up prepared and knocking the fuck out of it so you're not sent home.
So did it make you feel A, nervous, or B, not so nervous having to fill in and do that gig being in Canada? Did that make you feel a little more comfortable?
You know, it's good the point. Fact it wasn't in Canada. In 2011, it was the first time that I did it, and I was put on hold, and I was literally...
Oh, sorry, I was referring to, the last time when you ran through, and I guess it was kind of the abrupt change. It just kind of happened overnight. I think it was a couple of dates right before Winnipeg. It all comes back.
And it all comes
there
back.
There you go.
Because it was Calgary that I missed because of plane funk, and then Edmonton, and then Winnipeg.
Yeah.
So what was funny about 2011 was... I was sitting there and I was learning a DVD from the Tokyo show at the end of 2010. And cause you know, he's a big cure. He's a big, going to go longer. This is going to go thin. You got to go like, eh, when I go like that and I've got to, you know, they're like, I could walk wow. straight on the stage without a sound check or anything. So that's what they're telling me. And in my living room, watching this on the big screen with the pocket marshal and a mic stand, and I'm reading the lyrics. And they're like, "Hey, don't memorize the lyrics because you're gonna have a teleprompter." And I'm like, "Wow, that's gonna save my life." And but now I'm playing to my dogs in the living room, and I get said, and I'm like, "I don't want to fucking do this. This is stupid." And then you know, you get that in your head, like this isn't the right thing. Like nobody can walk on stage and do that. This is ridiculous. So that's what's in my head right now. So I throw the guitar down, I sit down, I turn on the TV, and what's on HBO? But the documentary, the Bon Jovi documentary.
Mm-hmm. Oh wow,
beautiful. And I was like, well, fuck, I guess I'm doing it. You know, like it's a sign, right? Yeah. So I went back in and doing it, and then when John called me April 14th. It was actually him calling me, and I didn't answer the phone. He left a message, and I called him back, and I said, "Hey, what's happening?" He goes, "Well, I want to fly you to New York to rehearse with the band for 2 days, and then put you on hold for May." And I'm like, "Okay." And then when I flew to New York and landed and ended up at rehearsal, that's when they found out that Richie just checked into rehab, and then May became not on hold.
Wow.
Playing May. So right. That
in 2 days.
In 2 days. Well, we did that. What did we do? We did the Jazz Fest, which is 50,000 people.
Sure.
On a Saturday night.
Full yeah. set, like a lot, like over an hour.
And Darren, to answer your question, I walked on stage and I knew at that point, because I've done it, not on this level, but I've been in so many situations where if you think about it too much, you're going to blow it. And
right.
You just got to stay outside of your head. And so in my head, it was, okay, dude, you've been singing and playing your entire life. This is just a bunch of Bon Jovi songs. Just do it. You know, stage with that. But then the confusion on 50,000 faces.
Yeah.
Good point.
Unsettling. It's kind of like everybody going, "Who the fuck is that?"
So there's no kind of like a announcement that says tonight, which you said where we'll be here, it'll be played by Phil.
Yeah, the role of Richie will be played.
They get the roster right. I get
the yeah. It's the understudies coming out to play the part of Hamlet tonight or something.
Oh like, my god! Remember that on the old TV sitcoms?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or on the soap operas, which is like,
the soap opera.
Yeah,
it's going to be played by Harry.
Yeah. Cass Winthrop will be played by Phil X tonight.
Cass Winthrop. Well, and let's face it, and this is in no way any disrespect to any other musicians on any other level, but when you have such an iconic member of a band, and you're stepping in to fill those shoes, I mean, you know, like we were just talking about that at the beginning of the show, and you know, we were talking about Kiss and the fact, you know, like can those guys be replaced? And you know, of course, there's going to be the, you know, the diehards that
obviously you're going to kind of have to win them over. And I think you've done just that. So,
well, it took a while. I mean, at the beginning, there were, where's Richie signs in the audience?
You know? Really?
It's going to happen. But I mean, people told me later at the Jazz Fest, and it's still, I mean, you know who the true fans are. Here we are. This year will be 10 years that I first filled in for Richie.
Wow. Right?
Oh, wait. Wow. And there are still people looking at 2019 videos going, where's Richie? You know, I mean, no. So the true fans were outside the Jazz Fest in line going, what are we going to see tonight? Is it Richie and Rehab? Like, who's playing? You know, it was that
kind of
thing.
Right.
Later. So what helped me out was John didn't say anything until the encore, which kind of freaked me out. But there was a girl in the ninth row who, like, captured every song on YouTube in high def and had it posted by the next morning. That was helpful. And but it was funny because you're looking at all these confused faces, and when John goes, want to thank Phil X for helping us out tonight, everybody immediately... Phil X. Exactly. He said Phil X. So I learned a whole bunch of stuff through that whole thing because I also realized that all these the web media platforms, just what did they say? We'll just say what they said. One thing that I found completely hilarious was guitar player from Triumph replaces Richie Sambora, and then media platform said Rick Emmett replaces. And I went, these people don't know what they're doing, man. Isn't this your job? Like, oh, it was so.
It's the first to the gate, right?
Yeah.
You know what? Now that when you say it like that, it truly changes what Wanted Dead or Alive would sound like with Rick singing that other part. Think about it.
Oh, man.
That is true. Yeah.
That's the perfect frozen face, by the way.
So how did you actually prepare for the Bon Jovi gig? Did you just watch live videos? Did they give you a live board tape? Did they give multi tracks of anything? Because you probably wanted it to be as close as possible to Richie at the start so that you could just kind of slide in and
when you think about the catalog, you got to listen to the record and then you got to listen to the live version. And then most people just in different keys because those old records were in 440 and then they play in E flat. So I had to learn two different keys. I had to pick up the E flat guitar and then pick up the 440 guitar. So I'm trying to learn everything. And my instinct said, if he's doing the solo from the record, do the solo from the record. And if he's meandering a little bit or goes way off, then, you know, do that, but don't go too far kind of thing. Hmm. Because there's no way my playing style would fit that era of music, right? But the thing is, the cool thing about it was I bought my own tickets to the New Jersey tour at CNE Grandstand in Toronto that isn't even there anymore. And so I was a fan and I was watching this. And so some of those songs were songs of my youth. But then after Keep the Faith, it's like, what? They got a country record? What? They got that record? What? They got, how many records did they put out? Now I'm learning, you know, I learned, say, 15 songs that I had heard before and then 20 songs that I had never heard before. So, and
that's a lot. That's a lot harder. When you're learning something, even when you're like just familiar with it, at least you're kind of got a leg up. When you're learning something from scratch, it's a whole other thing. Yeah.
Well, and that, not only that, I had to learn the solo. So, I mean, learning a rhythm thing and then learning a solo. And then once I got on the road, and say I learned 25 songs and hit the road, I was learning more songs all the time. Like, hey, this wasn't on the list, but I really want to do Better Roses tomorrow. Okay.
Right.
Learn Better Roses. And the thing is for me, I feel I didn't want to. Better Roses is one of those songs, like I mentioned earlier, you don't want to be reading that off the chart. You want to be able to, like, it wanted to be in here, and you want to display the emotion intended, like I mentioned before. It's like, it's one of those things. Like, I found myself at one point, I just committed everything to memory. But then once the new song started coming, I'm like, fuck, if I put this song in this year, Dead or Alive is coming out this year. And I'm At one point, I started making charts of, you know, here, can you run this one? And I'm, okay, this one can be charted, and this one can be charted. This one should be memorized. But, I mean, it was instinct, and it was, you know, up to me. Nobody told me what to do. Nobody told me how to play. You know, and John was the kind of guy that watched the DVD the next day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, really?
So we get on the jet, and I'm like,
oh, no.
How am I doing? And we'd be like, you're doing great, man. You're doing great. Don't worry about it. I'm like, okay. Cause,
that's great.
Yeah, but there was one time where when he asked me to learn Dry County, and that's a crazy solo.
Oh, yeah, it's one of the best. Yeah.
Memory-wise, it's like an epic journey. So, but I had done so much stuff, and I listened to it, and I'd go on stage, and that wasn't right, and that wasn't good, da, 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 da. And Takumi in 2013, he was hilarious. Could we do, like, Runaway? And before I actually learned the solo, because I just wanted to have the songs down and then worry about the solos later. Before I had the solo, he'd come up, we'd change guitars, and go, great solo. And then the next solo. Well, thanks for your honesty. I think I'll learn the solo tomorrow. So, yeah, but it was John that he said, now that you're in 2013, I thought it would be more similar to 2011. And Richie came back. In 2013, he didn't come back. So it was like, you're going to Europe next month. And then he came up to me and he said, you know what, if we're going to Europe next month, here's another 15 songs to learn, because we do 3.5 hours.
And, oh, my God.
Wow.
Try to do the solo to Dry County verbatim. And I'm like, okay. So that week off wasn't a week off. It was a lot of work.
No. 3.5 hours?
In Europe in 2013, it was 3. And in Prague, it was 3.5 hours in the rain.
Ooh, wow.
So that was, I learned a lot that year for sure. But I also learned a lot about the fans, because the true, like I was talking about true fans, and the Bon Jovi fans are amazing. And sure. They'd be so supportive. Like, they, you know, they're hanging out at the hotel, and then a guy would walk up to me. I go, hey, I saw you in the audience last night with that cow hat. And he's like, yeah, man, you're doing a great job. I'm a guitar player. I play in a Bon Jovi tribute band. I'm like, yeah, me too. But he, you know, and then him and another guy, Max, that's what I was telling me. There was a guy named Max, and they're like, hey, we're doing in Milan, where we're from, or Italy, where we're from, in Milan, we're doing a non-official band, a Bon Jovi band night. Would you come by? And I'm like, well, you know, you guys have been really cool and really supportive and stuff. So, yeah, I'll try and make it. And they're like, there's two Bon Jovi tribute bands playing. Will you get up and play? And I was like, who knows AC/DC? Yeah. Man, everything's on YouTube the next day.
Nah. I'm
playing with Bon Jovi.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't get up and jam with a tribute band. You know what I mean? No, unless you play Highway to Hell, which we did.
Right.
So that was a lot of fun.
Perfect.
Hey, Phil, just a quick change of subject, but for anyone who needs to see this, who hasn't, that version of, if Eddie Van Halen, now Rick Beato set up, how did that come about? It's on your Instagram, and it was Rick Beato said, hey, Phil, if Eddie Van Halen actually played the solo in Stairway to Heaven, what would it be? And you did that, which is fucking amazing.
That was awesome.
But, yeah. And unfortunately, though, it was just a couple days before Eddie had passed, which, of course, couldn't have planned that. But just, like, tell me about that, because that must have felt really, like, I know a lot of people were freaking out. Everyone shared it with me, like, check out this thing, filled it. And then 2 days later, Eddie passed.
Mm.
Yeah. It was nuts. It was like me and Rick. I mean, if you're going to geek out with someone about music, Rick's a good dude to get on Facebook.
I know.
So I love that guy. And I'm a huge fan of what he does, and he's just a huge fan of what I do. And sometimes we get on these Eddie rants, and he goes, and it was funny. He goes, I think I want to do a a what if series. And so I want you to do what it would sound like if Eddie Van Halen played the solo to Stairway to Heaven. I'm gonna do Peter Frampton, and I'm gonna call Eric Johnson to do Eric Johnson. And I'm like, that's a good call. And then it was because, and the timing that you're talking about, Brent, is so ridiculous, so crazy, because it had been a month since I sent in my part, and he did his thing, and we were waiting for Eric. And it was at a point where, wow, do we have a plan B? He goes, well, I'm interviewing Joe Satriani on Thursday. I can ask him. But let me check in with Eric again. We checked in with Eric again. So Eric said he had sent it on Wednesday, and then it ended up being Friday. And then he put it all together on Saturday, put it out on Monday, and Tuesday is when Eddie passed.
Yeah.
So, and it was wow. Rick that texted me. He's like, Eddie's gone. I'm like, gone where? Yeah. I was crying. And it was just the whole thing that Rick talks about now to this day when we talk is that he couldn't have put it out after.
Yeah.
It was, right.
And then he did a Rick Beato New Year's Eve live YouTube thing. And one of the questions somebody asked him, well, what's your favorite video you put out last year? And he said, the Stairway to Heaven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I'm glad to be a part of that. But, you know, my mentality for Ed was like, do I want it to be 1988? Do I want it to be? And then I thought, what was your favorite? My favorite Ed was, you know, Fair Warning. And
sure.
One of my favorite solos that Ed ever did was Beat It. So, yeah. Okay, so Ed walks in and does a solo to Beat It. What's that mentality? So that's how I approached it. And you can, I mean, there's so many quotes in it, and I didn't want it to be just a, but I don't think there's one fucking A minor Van Halen song, except for ain't talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. I mean, you know, I put a lot of quotes in, I went for the vibe with the, you know, how he plays stuff, and I was really, really proud of it. And when I sent it to Rick, he was the first one. He was like, holy shit. Yeah. So I'm really proud of that. And that it came out.
Great.
And it did.
That's awesome. Yeah, you're right. Cause that's not something you could have followed up with. Yeah.
Everybody talks about the Brown sound and Ed's guitars and amps. And I mean, Ed could pick up any guitar and any amp and sound like Ed. And I've
always.
And then you have a guy that's got the perfect Ed rig, but it doesn't even come close because he doesn't have the hands.
No, not at all.
I had this Van Halen tone, and I played Eddie Van Halen, and it sounded great. And I had to work on a project later that night, so hey, I got a tone up. Let's plug it in. So plug in the tone, and I do the solo on something else that's not even the vibe. And I'm like, that sounds like shit. It's like I love this story of Ted Nugent plugging into Ed's rig at a festival, and just sounded like Ted Nugent.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what hands do, you know?
I remember somebody telling me at a Billy Gibbons, like a ZZ Top sound check, that BB's, Billy's tone was actually super metal. Like when you're sound checking his rig, you're like, this sounds super metal. How does this work? And then as soon as Billy puts it on, it's Billy Gibbons. You know what I mean? It's like, for some reason, it just sounds the way it sounds through his hand.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's really weird. I don't know.
But it's really funny because I actually got to play with him a couple of times. And the one time I show up and he's got a Marshall half stack and Stevie Salas has a Marshall half stack. And they gave me a little Fender combo on a trip.
Wow.
Really, guys? Really? So, I mean, I don't even know where to start.
No.
So
a tube screamer, I think, would be the place to start, I guess.
Yeah, you definitely need an overdrive. And I had a prototype of my Fuck Jazz overdrive, Phil X overdrive. And so I had that, and then I'm plugging in, and I'm doing this, and I'm standing in front of it, but outside, out there, is probably ripping somebody's head off. And Billy literally came over, and he's like, I'm going to help you out for a second. And turns the treble off. And goes, now boost a little more on the overdrive pedal. And I did that. And then I'm like, fuck. Thanks, Billy Gibbons. So the next time I get, the next time I, because he also looked at my overdrive pedal and he goes, I don't have my glasses. Does that say fuck jazz overdrive? Yeah, he's like, I got to take a picture of that. That's great. So the next time I got to play with him, I gave him, here, man, this is yeah, but that's
awesome. Awesome.
That's
he's so awesome. Such a cool dude, man.
Yeah, he's the man. Cool. That's great.
That is, yeah.
Oh, we've kept you a long time, Phil.
Dude, how long have we been going?
We are going on 1 hour and 25 minutes. So before we all go, big night tonight, if anybody's watching the World Juniors, and the fact right. that you guys are all Canadians down in the U.S., Canada yes. versus the U.S. tonight.
Wow. That's
right. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
What's the take? What do you think?
I haven't been paying Canada's attention been to any of this.
Canada's been like routing. It's like 10-0, 16-0. Although the other day it was like 3-1, I think, from the Czech. But
it's getting closer. So yeah, but
interesting. Well, I'm hopeful.
There I thought we were going to talk about the Georgia election.
Music well, and hockey. Those stuff. Are the music and hockey. That's all that matters here.
You didn't get into coffee. Yeah. You're the coffee.
We talked about coffee before we turned this thing on to the unsuspecting public. Have a question.
Okay, so yes. So I was all about the French press earlier this year. Wait, sure. it's still early this year. In November and December, I was kind of doing the French press thing. And then I got a coffee maker for Christmas, which I'm digging.
What kind?
Right.
It's a Braun. And you're like, perfect. They make shaving shit, man. So here's my question. You got the metal basket, right? The filter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I kind of like, just for cleanup purposes, I put a paper basket, a filter in.
Yeah.
The basket. But the other day I was like, I'm going to try it with just paper and see what happens. And it actually, I had to put in an extra scoop to give it the flavor, but I think I preferred it. So what do you guys think?
I'm down with the paper all the way. Really? The basket didn't work for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It tastes better going through paper for some reason.
I think so.
Fitzy?
Fitzy sticking to French press. I still say it's the easiest. It's the fastest. It's the easiest to clean up. And, you know, it's still, I like the richness of, I can, you know, put 5 to 6 scoops in a French press. I use the big French press and I get like 2 big cups out of it. Yeah. It's just perfect.
Okay. So
mainlining coffee.
What about the pour over thing?
Do you grind your own beans?
Yeah. No, okay. I buy whole beans. So
for French press, you make it a little coarser, right?
Yeah, but sometimes if you actually have an espresso grind, which is very fine, it's still going to be okay. But it's really hard to press down on the pump, right? On the but you know what? I also have been. I have a coffee siphon, which looks like a meth experiment. That's pretty fun too. That's like a combination of a brewed coffee in your Braun and a French press. I like that. And Corey mentioned pour over. That's kind of hip too. Like I'm into pour over. I have the V60, I think it's called. So I do kind of change it up, but I also like a quick Keurig once in a while too. I'm not mad at it. And actually Todd just got the Nespresso, which is killer too.
We have before we move, like Keurig is so convenient.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We had a coffee maker in LA that also had a Keurig, a K-cup section. So I'd make a pot in the morning and then do a Keurig later on. But change it up. It's like guitar strings, right?
Yeah, exactly. Coincidentally, our side project with Phil X is called Cybernam. No, what's the other one? Yeah, that's a good name for it. Cybernam. I think that's
what Cybernam.
Yeah.
Should we do a Cybernam jam?
Yeah,
I think we should. Yeah,
let's do it.
Just
what are we playing?
NA for 97 bars. Go.
Wait.
Yeah, just
that would be hilarious.
So wait, we need you guys. I'm surprised the Tuke Talk it doesn't have a theme song.
Like theme song? Tuke Talk.
We said that from day one.
Tuke Talk.
That's right. What we do now, that's recorded, so that's going to be at the start of every show from now on.
But we own the rights to it because you're on our show.
That's right. Yeah,
we got the publishing, dude.
I like it. Tuke Talk. That perfect. Let's do it, guys.
Yeah.
Tuke Talk Tuesday at 2, and then Dallas Rains will do the
Dallas Rains.
Dallas Rains.
What key is it in? Is it A?
Sure.
Oh, wow.
Oh, here we go. Oh, the drummer's picking up the guitar. Here we go.
Tuke Talk Tuesday at 2. Come on.
Tuesday at 2. And then Silver's the high option.
That's too many T's, man.
Yeah, exactly. Whoa. Tuesday at 2. It's alliteration. It's tough. Wow, it's an AC/DC song.
You know what? This thing without the latency.
I know. This is the best example.
Perfect timing. Yeah.
That would be amazing.
I think within a 5-year span we'll be able to like jam live like this. Then we'll probably never leave our houses. Fuck it.
Really? Please, no. That's what we're doing in 3 years.
Fucking
everywhere. You can't even go outside without a freaking respirator. We're in here jamming.
Exactly. It's going to be like Walking Dead outside, so I'm just going to stay in here and play shows.
Are you guys still on lockdown?
You guys are.
You know what?
Everywhere here in L.A.
I'm on lockdown.
Yeah.
1 in 5 Los Angeles citizens now have COVID. That's 20%.
Well, test incredible.
I mean,
testing positive. What?
Wow.
The testing is coming back 1 in 5. Not 1 in 5.
Okay. That's different.
Crazy.
Oh, this is how fake news gets spread. Yeah.
Because it was
guys. I heard something. I heard something the other day. I heard that Live Nation is talking about. Maybe trying to do something in this summer, because before it was going to be 2022, but they're waiting to see evidence of the vaccine working.
Hmm. Right.
And if the vaccine is working and the percent of, allergic reactions and negative stuff is really, really low, then you could go to a concert if you could show that you've taken vaccine in the last month.
Passport.
A vaccine t-shirt that you just walk around with a t-shirt.
Right.
Yeah, I think
my wife, Lindy, she's like, what? You got to take a vaccine to go to a concert? I'm like,
yeah. That's what it's going to take.
We've
all taken worse and gone to concerts, so I mean, I'm sure it's all right.
Usually out in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Actually, out in the parking lot selling vaccines. Let's go meet that.
You can get a cocktail, vaccine and LSD all in one shot.
Yeah. Well, they're doing it on airlines. I'm sure that's the same, but I know in Canada, anyways, it's rapid testing. You can't get on. You can't even fly now without proof of, test results. So.
Have you flown, Phil? Has any of us flown? Like, I haven't flown.
I did.
I flew.
Oh, yeah, you did. That's right.
Like 3 weeks ago, Burbank to Phoenix, but,
Phil, you fly to Nashville, right? Like, you're out of Nashville?
I flew to Nashville. In August, I flew here to do the Bon Jovi thing, but I was, like, super, like, not only wearing a mask, but also wearing a shield. And which is crazy because when you come in for a landing without the air on, you feel like your face is in a sauna. And then I'd get to the hotel and take all my clothes off and throw it in the shower and then get in the shower and then lice all the sheets and all. I was nuts. But lucky enough, I was tested twice when I was here and then I tested again when I got home.
Crazy.
And then now we're talking about doing some flying to Jersey next month for something. So, I mean, at least I'm a lot closer now. But
yeah, totally.
Again, I'm going to take precautions. I think you have to take precautions. There's so many.
Like, that's all you can do.
If I call somebody up, it seems like I want to say one out of five people tells me that they have COVID right now that I'm talking to on a regular basis. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Help me unload a truck tomorrow. Oh, man, I got COVID. Hey, man, can you do this from here on your computer? Oh, I'm in bed, man. I got COVID. I was like, what? How did this happen?
It's weird because I have a friend too, a close friend of mine, that he got it. He's like, what?
Wow. Really?
You have it?
Wow. Well, I mean, you know what's scary about it? I don't want to turn this into a COVID discussion because it's kind of it kind of just bums everybody out all the time. But you have the asymptomatic being the best case scenario and dead being the worst. But then in between, you have, man, I just couldn't taste anything for a month, a week. To I was in the hospital for a month, and my lungs are Swiss cheese.
I know, it's crazy.
Terrible, terrible situations. So, I mean, hopefully it'll we'll all bounce back. But, I mean, the one thing that I'm grateful for that is that we, you know, we get to do stuff like this. And
absolutely.
Hang out, even though this isn't in person, it's the next best thing. And we get to make music. And, you know, my silver lining of not going on the road because everything was canceled was getting to spend more time with my family and my kids and stuff like that.
So absolutely.
I think we learned a lot about ourselves.
Yeah.
About the people that we know, for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
And
well said, Phil X. Well said. I think you've actually put a pretty good cap on the entire thing. Because you're right. It's like, you know, I'm kind of a cup half full kind of guy. Half full of vodka. No, I mean, you know, I think it's, you know, it's going to be fine. We're going to be fine. It's going to be fun. We're going to have fun. We're going to make music. There's a Bon Jovi record out already. I mean, you know, it's amazing.
I believe it came out in October. And
I know, yes.
And it's been having some legs. It's doing pretty good.
Of course, yeah. So
figuring out the drills. I think the drills will be in the next few months. We have a single coming out this month. It's called I Love You on Her Lips. So I love you in quotes on her lips, but not in her
mouth.
Gary Novak played drums on that. And we have my friend Frank Griner from Canada who made an incredible lyric video. So all that's cool. Come on.
Exciting.
So, yeah. That's the note to end on.
There you go. You're right. What are you doing in the future? That's what you're doing in the future. I'm very excited to hear that.
Thanks.
Hello, my friends. It's time to get back to it. Thank you so much. We had Phil. We've been talking to Phil. We've been talking to you for months about, like, come on Tuke Talk. And it'd be like, yeah, okay, cool. And then we'd get, hey, come on Tuke Talk. Okay, great. That we kind of like get all lost. But I'm so happy we finally made this happen. And now you can pretty much be here every Tuesday, really.
Yeah.
I just thought, I don't want to be the guy wearing a toque next time. Like,
yeah. Well, I have on my day wig today, so I can't put a toque on.
So that qualifies as a toque in itself.
It's a toque in and of itself, exactly. Yeah. Other thing.
Yeah. I think I'm going to laugh about that over that one for a while. That
was like, day wig.
Day wig. It's different than my night wig.
What's that? Just everything tied up in a bun?
It's tied up in a bun, yeah.
Yeah. Ponytail wig. If you stare at Darren's feed long enough, his door looks like a bass guitar neck.
Wow, you're freaking me out. It does, yeah. You mean the door on his left? Yeah.
On the right.
On your left, Darren.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, it looks like a bass guitar neck if you just kind of
those are the strings and those are the frets, yeah.
Yeah.
I think somebody's been doing the LSD vaccine over there.
Yeah. This is what you've been staring at the whole show?
Yeah. Right.
No, I haven't been paying attention. I'm just looking at the bass guitar of it. Exactly. Like Darren.
All right, you guys go home. Next week we have, do we want to say who's here next week? I don't even know who's next week, but Phil X is going to be here interviewing with us. He's trapped in a basement now, having to do Tuke Talk every Tuesday. We'll worry about next week.
All kidding aside, thanks for having me, guys. It's been fun. I love the whole, you know, I didn't even know there was a Canadian mob. Not, you don't call it that. What did you call it? The mafia?
Mafia.
Or something?
Yeah. Mafia.
So I met you guys.
It's a very polite. It's a very polite mafia, though. Well, yeah. Sorry.
Sorry.
The funny thing is, sorry. This will be the last thing I said. I feel like being from Canada is really cool. Like I have family and friends still up there, but Canada never really did any shit for me.
I think everybody here can agree that our whole lives.
Just Canadians proud, and I'm like, I had to leave.
Well, yeah,
certain industries. Yeah, Rick,
we're all living in the
States.
Who can say that?
I mean, you know, we all have. I love Canada, and it's great to be in this kind of community where we all have like backstories and. It's amazing, you know. Like I didn't even know you were 18 when you opened up for Frozen Ghost in Winnipeg. That's crazy. Because I was like,
Who else can you talk to about Frozen Ghost? I mean,
here's the best one yet.
We're sorry.
We're sorry.
Thank you, Asta.
I didn't know that when I did see Frozen Ghost in Winnipeg. What
has this been happening the whole time?
That was the first question of the day, actually.
No. Well, there was actually a couple of comments.
Okay, see that girl that just popped up and said sorry?
Yeah.
I love Canada. Yeah. I signed her hatchet.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
I'm serious. She came to a drills thing after an axe throwing class.
How'd she get into the club?
That was her. Signed my hatchet. Wow. I'm like, okay.
They have some seriously lax security at your drills gigs.
Yeah. Bring
your own hatchet.
With a freaking hatchet.
And I'm like,
I guess with a name like the drills, people are just bringing in all sorts of tools.
Yeah, I've never said a hatchet before. It's got to be high on the list of stuff that we've signed, right?
I hope you'll sign my katana next time.
There was one comment on here that I wanted to address, but it flew by and we were in the midst of a conversation. And I haven't seen it, but somebody said, I guess I'm assuming it would be Rich Fortas from GNR on his Instagram said, how many Canadians does it take to host a podcast? Is there any truth to that? Did you see that?
Apparently six of us.
I saw it. We just posted it on my Instagram. How many guitars
Richard.
Do you take to change this light bulb?
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, if the 18-year-old that saw you, Phil, back in 88, didn't know that one day I'd see in the, you know, one of America's greatest bands from New Jersey, the Italian twist of there's a Greek Canadian guy from Toronto in the band now.
Isn't that crazy?
Who knew? It's pretty crazy.
Well, let's be honest. Toronto is closer to Jersey than LA, so they kind of went in the right direction, I think.
You know? They did.
Yeah.
Hey, there you go.
There you go.
But it's funny how when that happens, how many everybody's like, "Hey, he's Canadian." Yeah, but he's Greek. Yeah, but he lives in California. And then I think it was still at Yamaha. There was a Yamaha thing, and it was like Canadian born of Greek ethnicity, living in Los Angeles, Phil X.
Right. Hey, that's confusing.
Does anyone say Phil Zanidis? Like, do they actually pronounce your last name, or is it just it's always better to just go with the X?
Well, it's funny. It's I always go with X Zanidis. But so this is going to go on forever, isn't it?
I started asking about the Zuki behind you there. I just noticed.
We had to get our son into grade one, and the school said that their online program was full, and then that he'd have to attend school, and he can't, you know, we don't want him to attend school. So my wife doesn't take no for an answer, goes to the school, she's speaking to people, and somebody goes, "What's your last name?" And she goes, "Exonides." And then the principal comes over and goes, "What's your last name?" She goes, "Exonides." He's like, "Like Phil X, Exonides?"
Wow.
And she goes, "Well, you know my husband?" And he's like, "This is Guitar Land. Everybody knows your husband." So in 2 days, there's an email saying, "Welcome Xavier to grade one online school." You know, so it was
amazing.
Not having to drop a name, but it was good.
I appreciate that you said grade one and not first grade.
Right.
Yes.
Yep.
That's Canadian.
Great one.
Canadian. There you go.
Too.
Canadian. Hey guys, let's do it. Let's end it. Love you guys.
Okay. On that bazooki.
Again, hey, Phil. Wait.
I'm seeing that bazooki back there behind you. Can you play us out on that?
My bazooki?
Yeah. Yeah, the bazooki. Wait, on the way out. Play that?
What do we cyber jam?
Yeah, cyber Nam Jam with that thing. I don't even know how to pronounce it.
And it's in D. We can play. Here we go. Here, hold on a second.
Here we go.
Thank you so much, everybody. We'll see you next week. Thank you, Darren. Thank
love you guys.
All right, thanks, guys. See everybody next Tuesday.
You got it.
Great job, Phil. Thanks again.
Bye.
Bye.